to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
So I want to take a moment before I launch into today's talk to recognize our Columbia Centers for Spiritual Living practitioner body. What an amazing gift they are, and what an amazing job they did last Sunday. It was quite the surreal and precious experience to sit in the back of the room and just run the in-the-room PowerPoint slides and just immerse myself in the very human experience of feeling like a very proud papa as I just witnessed and experienced them step into their brilliance. More of that to come. More of that to come. All right, let's take a breath together, shall we? So this morning, we are exploring this idea, this definition of the profane. The dictionary defines profane as relating or devoted to that which is not sacred. Interesting. The word profane comes through an interesting evolution. Two words in the Latin, pro meaning before, and fanum meaning temple. And that morphed into the Latin word profanus, meaning outside the temple, not sacred, which then evolved into the Middle English translation of the word meaning heathen. Really interesting stuff. And I've been dancing, especially this week, with how to effectively address this idea and begin to bridge this separation that we experience when we think of the profane. Because even the thought of it, even the idea of it, creates a separation. And where I've been dancing is in the idea of a creation story. And one of the things that we talk about in ministerial school is that where other religions tend to have a specific creation story, that science of mind doesn't actually have a creation story. And I've really been grappling with that this week, that, well, how can it be that we don't have a creation story? And then I kept trying to write one. And stories oftentimes begin with once upon a time. And in what we teach, time is a construct of creation. So creation had to begin before time. So starting it with once upon a time is an inaccurate beginning to a creation story. And even to start with in the beginning is an inaccurate beginning for a creation story. And so I laughed as I recognized that there really is no accurate way to articulate creation in human words. And so perhaps we can just imagine, much like last month's topic of paradox, that we speak in limited words about an unlimited. And so perhaps it may roll out something like this. in the beginning, before there was a beginning, because it always existed, so it has no beginning. Everything was that was no thing, and yet it contained and was everything. Right? It's like, and if your brain cells are busy going, wait a minute, what? And that is the essence of creation. That this infinite beingness simply is. It has no beginning because it always has been. And it is the unformed and the formed. And so I imagined and grappled with how, what process did things start to come into being? And I really went inward because my human brain doesn't have those answers. And where I landed, at least in today's understanding, may change, is this infinite beingness is pure desire. That it knows that it is everything, and it really knows itself, so it knows its infinite possibility. And so its only motivation just might be desire, a desire to experience itself. And so as this desire, it has ideas, and every idea it has comes into being. And so the physical realm, the cosmic realm, begins to take shape and begins to take form. But where did this separation happen? Because I'm just imagining, and it's only an imagining, because I'm not a star, I'm not a planet, I'm not the air itself. And so I have no actual idea or knowing whether it's self-conscious or not. I know we talk about humans as being self-conscious, but do I really know that a star has no self-recognition? I don't. I've taught that it doesn't, but I don't know that. But I'm imagining, with what I do know, that stars are just busy being stars, that they don't question their purpose. They don't separate themselves from what they're made of. And so when did that happen? That we as humans created this idea of separation? And I imagine myself as the first human being on planet Earth. Zero knowledge of science, zero knowledge that I'm a human being, nothing. Right? I'm just all of a sudden here, as Jessie said in her, one of her songs, on this blue rock. Right? I don't know what the sun is. I don't know what up is. I don't know what down is. I know nothing. I am simply here in physical form experiencing. And if we follow mythology from the perspective of putting on, taking the position of that very first human being, we can begin to understand that here is this physical being experiencing the warmth of sunlight on the physical body. And then they begin to experience nightfall. And as they experience nightfall, all they are experiencing is this warm light going away. In mythology, speaks to this as imagining a cloth being pulled across and stars being interpreted as little pinholes in the veil as a promise that the light would return. And that this was how we established a deity in the sky. And that makes sense to my human brain. And lo and behold, the next morning, the veil is pulled away and the sun is still there. And we experience the warmth again. And we're off and running in this very human activity of externalizing and defining and labeling and limiting everything. And let me be really clear. I'm not saying that's a negative or a positive. I'm simply speaking to that's what happens. And so we create this idea within that realm of good and bad, right and wrong, up and down, temples and non-temples, sacred and profane. And yet, if we go back to the beginning of the story, where everything already is within this one infinite possibility, creating from its desire to know itself, for me anyway, it's pretty easy to follow the logic that everything must actually be that in form, and that it truly is only human thought that separates me from that, that separates you from that. The quote that I've been working with is attributed to Rumi. It's sometimes attributed to Lao Tzu and Buddha as well. Silence is the language of God. All else is poor translation. Did a little research on that and found out that the first part of that, silence is the first language of God, actually came to us through St. John of the Cross. And then the contemporary Christian mystic, Father Thomas Keating, added, all else is poor translation. Interesting. So what is this idea of silence? Because I think oftentimes when we think about how to know the infinite, how to know ourselves as the infinite, and we talk about going into the silence, we simply stop at the idea of what is audible to us as human beings. And I submit to you that the true silence is the absence of the noise of our thoughts. That there is a place where we move beyond our human intelligence, beyond our ideas, beyond the limitation of our language, into infinite intelligence that has no words, but is simply pure knowing. Pure knowing. Unfettered intelligence. Unlimited intelligence. That is the very nature and essence of our being. If we think about our own body, and oftentimes we think about seeing the divine in ourselves, and yet our own physical eyes are absolutely incapable of seeing our own physical eyes without the aid of a mirror. And I've sat with that. It's like from the perspective of seeing inside myself, even that requires me to move beyond this idea of a separation from this body. The idea of going upward in a spiral demands that I go inward, away from everything that distracts me, that I give up, that I surrender, at least momentarily, any attachment to what I call knowledge or mental constructs, and get to a silence that is beyond the clutter of my own thinking. A silence that is beyond the reasoning of my human rationale. A silence where the divine meets the divine. And then it is just pure experience. It is God experiencing God. It is God revealing itself to itself. And I don't believe there is any way that we can accurately articulate that experience, because the minute we begin to speak about it, we diminish it. And that doesn't mean we don't strive to experience it. We do. The sensoria, our five senses, are perhaps a brilliant pathway to begin to bridge this idea of the profane and the sacred, to begin to bring them together, to do the spiritual practice so that we, at least at the individualized level, know the God within us. Because when we know that, we know who we are. And then as we move about this planet, to use our senses as tools. And I offer you this. We have touch, smell, taste, sight, and sound, right? So I invite you to begin to navigate the world differently. That experience touch using your body. And when you do, feel God. Smell with your nose, with an awareness that you are inhaling the fragrance of God, no matter what that fragrance is. Taste with your mouth, knowing that you are experiencing God, feeding God, God sustaining God. To be consciously aware that everything we ingest is God in form. And it has an evolution. And every iteration of God that has been a part of bringing it to your plate is God in action. It's a lot of God going on, right? And to be mindful of that. And then I think perhaps the two that are most challenging for us is to look with our eyes and see only God. Look with our eyes and see only God. To listen with our ears and hear only God. Let's take this into prayer. So with this breath, I know I experience God. All that there is this one. By whatever name I call it, God, Buddha, Allah, life, love, peace, power, presence. It is that infinite, active, always existent, no beginning, no end, desire to know itself. And I know that in its desire to know itself, I am created in its image and likeness for the sole purpose of it knowing and experiencing and expanding itself as the creation of me. And what I know is that this same truth is true of all life, every grain of sand, every rainbow, every magnificent mountain, and every individualized human manifestation, incarnation of this thing I call God in physical form as a person. All God, all the time. And so I speak my word, claiming, affirming that we are each guided in our own perfect journey inward, deeper into that place, into that perfection of being that recognizes the self. And that as we know that inwardly, that we move that outwardly, so that we live, move, and have our being in connection, God experiencing God, God seeing God, God hearing God, God all the time expressing its godliness in every thought, in every breath, in every situation. This is the world I imagine that works for all. so grateful to feel in the depths of my being the absolute certainty that that is moving itself into being. And knowing that the word spoken is the word complete, I can let it go. I can take my human hands off and allow myself to simply be guided into manifesting that in all that I say and do. And so it is with great joy that I say yes, that I release my word, which is the word of the infinite, desiring and speaking itself into being.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, columbiacsl.com. to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@columbiacsl.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.